Hey folks, good morning. We're going to make a start. It's actually going to be the three of us, Chris, Rachel, and myself, with any questions or anything like that. But I'm aware that some of you might have some stuff that's specific. Well, the stuff that's specifically about Soul Survivor, I'll try an answer. I just want to say, really, first of all, thank you so much for coming and bringing your young people. It would be really boring without you. And this is the 25th of 26 days of festivals, and but we want to finish really strong because it's about them and it's for them, and there's still a journey to go. We've seen Jesus do the most wonderful things over the 26 days. And bizarrely, each festival's different. Each one has a different flavor. And some of the things that we've seen a whole load of young people, over 1,200, give their lives to Jesus, and which is the wonderful thing. And it's funny, every year when I put that up, you know, I get excited and I put it on social media. Every year there's always a couple of folk, bless them, and you understand why, that say, oh yes, but how many will still be Christians next year? Are they? How do you count them? Are they real conversions? And it's like, oh bless, I don't know how many are going to be Christians next year. You know, you're tempted to say, 973 will, and the rest will have, dropped out. It's like very strange. But I get it. You know, there's the concern for discipleship, and of course that's your job. You know, that's the local church. That's not us. And that's why it's a partnership, and that's why we want to do it together. Just to say, about this year, we've had some big transitions. First of all, starting our Naturally Supernatural conference, which we had a great first year, and we retained a lot of the Momentum age group. So we had about 700 and something between the ages of 18 and 21. But then we also had over 600 children in the children's work. So it really was all ages, but it still felt like us. And we were really encouraged. Lots of folk came and said they're going to come with their whole churches. We had leaders checking us out. And the reason we're doing it is not because we want to, I love, we came out of New Wine. I love New Wine. And Focus, we love HDB. And Spring Harvest, I took my youth group to Spring Harvest the second year in Aberystwyth, which was a long time ago. And we love Spring Harvest, and we've sent messages to Greenbelt up the road. I love Greenbelt. So this isn't about competing, but what we've realized is we wanted to do something that's specifically on equipping the church. Because we've noticed lots of times young people come here, they meet with the Lord, they get filled with His Spirit, and then they go back, and it can be tough. We know it can be tough because they send us messages. And so we want to serve the whole church because we believe in church. So if it's appropriate, you might want to mention it if your church doesn't go anywhere. And this might be. We've already got over 400 booked in and paid for next summer, which is quite amazing. But that's been the first thing that's been, a transition and a risk. The second thing is moving to Peterborough, because that was a risk, and we've lost in the end a handful. I don't know if any of you were at B, but it was rammed, it was overfull, we're trying to work all that out, but we're so glad we did it, because Shepton Mallet is a quagmire. It really is in a bad way, and this has got so much better facilities. It is so much more central for many, even though I know for those in the southwest and parts of Wales, it's tough. We know that, and We know that. But, you know, like you had just to make the best decision that we could. But just to say also, we've had, because it's our first time here, we've had some teething issues that we want to iron out. We're aware of a number of them. If you're aware of ones that you think we're not, please, there's a questionnaire that's going to go out to you all. Please fill it in and just say the things that we could do better, because we really want to. One of the things to say that we've realized that we got a bit wrong this year is at sea, we think that the meetings have been very long, and they've all been very long, and the age profile of this is a bit younger than B, because we were trying to work out why it felt different. And actually, there's a lot more 12 to 15-year-olds, whereas B had a lot more 16 to 18-year-olds. And and it was my fault on the first night. Normally we say the first night is, you know, we keep it shorter worship. Some of them come from churches where they're not used to any of this. I forgot to say to Rend, let's keep it a bit shorter. And so we're going to try just to make the meetings a little shorter, a little more punchy, because I'm just aware that some of the younger ones, they're, you know, by the end, they're hanging in there. You know, 2.5 hours, if you're 13, I know. Every year we think, oh, we've been doing this 25 years and we're still getting it wrong. But that's the way it goes. There's always things to learn. But despite that, you know, we've heard the most amazing stories. We're still shocked at the amount of brokenness. And the truth is, it's seemingly more at sea than the others, or more being obvious. You know, we had yesterday morning, we had a lot of heart-rending tears. And it breaks your heart, really, to see that. The only other thing that I needed to say to you is, we're going to mention it this morning, but we're doing a mission in Bristol at Easter with the churches of Bristol, and they're working really hard. And I'll give the details, and they're on a card, a brochure. Obviously, from the churches of Bristol point of view, they want to reach people in Bristol with the gospel, and they're doing it all the time. Our not-so-hidden agenda is, we want young people to catch a vision for mission. And we realized years ago when we started, we made sure a third of our seminars were mission, evangelism, social concern, all of that, getting involved with the community. But anyone ever wanted to do was be a worship leader. And we realized that was because we talked about mission, but what they saw was worship. And then when we did the message in Manchester in 2000 and Soul in the City, London, in 2004, it was after those that the young people started bringing their friends who aren't Christians. And they did it, and we had to play catch up, because they caught a vision for mission. And so this is not going to be a huge thing, but if you would like to bring your youth group, if you would like some of them to come with you, we're going to all go and do it together. And it's going to be over, I think, 5 days. I think the cost is £60, but accommodation's provided and transport within Bristol and stuff like that. It will be basic accommodation, I think. But the churches of Bristol are working really hard. They've appointed a coordinator. They meet together regularly. They're on board. And we long for this. In the mornings, we're going to have like Soul Survivor style meetings. And then we're going to go out there to serve with the churches and do all sorts of things. So I just wanted to mention that, so that is on your radar. Now, last night, I need to say, Rachel was absolutely flipping brilliant. Once again, it was just a real masterclass in communicating to young people, I tell you. And that story at the end is a killer story. When I've heard it last at B, I could hardly speak afterwards. You know, I had to come up, and it's just and a brilliant, brilliant picture of the Father's love. And we love what these guys are doing. Have you mentioned about the youth leaders training event, the youth leaders conference? You know, we want to support that in every way we can. because there must be gathering, some sort of gathering, to train and equip and support and encourage youth leaders. And you know where this is the front line. This really is the front line. And you know, we got to stay the course, because this is the most. Oh, I will say it. This is the most important job in the church. It's not any idiot can be a senior pastor or a vicar or a canon or Archbishop of Canterbury or anything like that. And phew, you know, you don't need any skill to do any of that, or children's workers or worship pastors or anything like that. Youth workers. That is where it's at. And the reason, I'm being a bit naughty, okay? I don't quite believe all of that I just said. But I do a bit. And the reason is, you know, most people who become Christians before they're 20. And by far. And this is the age, this is the place. And we're all very aware. That for many of you, you feel torn because you're having to explain your young people to the rest of the church and the rest of the church to your young people. And sometimes that can be really lonely. And so often there hasn't been support. So between us all as youth organizations, we want to support you in the best way that we can. And one of the things about youth work that works is a bit of longevity. And so we want to find ways of helping folks stay the course, because it can be lonely and it can be hard. And working with young people, you have utter joys and you also have the other stuff. Because, you know, if you notice, teenagers can let you down, you know, and they get it wrong and they mess up and all of that. And it's understanding that that's part of the course, and hanging in there and finding fellowship where we're encouraged. Anyway, I've talked enough. Any questions? If they're about Soul Survivor, I'll try and answer them. If they're not, we'll do it between us. But any questions or comments? Who's going to be first? Yes, mate.
It's kind of a two-part question. The first part of the question's a little bit selfish, because there's a few of us here that live here in Peterborough. We were just wondering, what is the plan for Peterborough's Soul Survivor here for a certain number of years, or for the foreseeable future, or whatever? And also, is there anything that we, as the churches in Peterborough, can do to support what's going on?
Thank you. Well, very simple answer to that. We're planning to be here for a while. We're not planning to be here short term. And we're talking with church leaders in Peterborough and leaders of youth networks about maybe certainly from one of the Soul Survivors next year, like we do in Stafford, sending kids out in the afternoons to work with churches in Peterborough. So we're looking at that. But that's really specific, so we'll move on, because if it's a specific question that's just about you, ask us privately, because we want to have questions as much as possible that are helpful to everyone. Did you have a question?
What's the secret to your beauty?
What's the secret to my beauty? Oh my word, it's the honest truth is, I'm going to take that seriously, it's not something I can get proud about, because it's not something that I did. It's just a gift, really. It's the way I was created. I'll stop it. Any other question? Yes.
You came to speak at our youth weekend this year in Aldridge Youth Fellowship. I don't know if you remember. We've got a church that has youth that has been the same for a very long time, and we had people that ran that for a very long time. I don't know if you remember Rob. He actually passed away a few weeks ago. And so change is really hard where we are, particularly working with a legacy. And it was hard battling with somebody who'd done something a long time in his life. How do you deal with change when there's a legacy and also a church that is struggling to move forward?
Um,
I don't know. I mean, I think all of us react like that because probably all of us feel change is not easy. And whether it's a legacy like what you're explaining or just simply taken over from someone else that did it. So I think one of the things is actually a confidence that God has called each one of us and he's equipped each one of us and we carry a certain shape and a certain way of being a leader. So I think part of it, as Mike was saying earlier, is invest in the call that God's put in your life. Kind of find people around you who are going to pray into that, who are going to call out of you what God's put in you and help you dream his dreams for the youth ministry. But also thank God for what's gone before. I think sometimes we live in a culture that says somehow we have to put our brand, our mark on this. We've got to kind of prove ourselves. And my little overexposure thing now, I think I did not a very good job last night. So most of the night last night, I was going over my talk in my head going, oh, why did you say that? And you didn't explain that properly. And that was a bit weird. You basically just squawked at 4,000 teenagers for 40 minutes. And we all know that feeling because we all have that little dialogue in our head that says, you're not as good as the last person or you're only as good as the last thing you did. And I think that's sometimes how the enemy likes to kind of keep us shackled and hold us down. So I think it's saying, God, you've called me for this time. You've given me something to say. I might be more keenly aware than anybody else of all my weaknesses and my failures and I'm not very good at this. But Lord, it's about you. And will you release me into what you've called me to do? And let's celebrate what's gone before. Let's celebrate the great legacy, the shoulders of giants that we stand on. And let's be honest and real about that. Let's see our young people see that. We're not saying, oh, well, they did a bad job or they weren't very good, so we're better. But let's kind of see ourselves in that long line. I don't know your situation, so I'm not sure what that situation is. But probably for all of us, we get that, don't we? We're not as good as our last talk. We are who God called us to be. And part of us doing this ministry and Mike talking about getting a network around us is saying, Lord, help me be who you called me to be. The leader that you called me to be, no more, no less. That's really important. I read in Psalm 19 this morning, David says, Lord, protect me from presumptuous sin, I think. And I sort of Googled, what does presumptuous mean? I don't really understand. And presumptuous means where you overstretch yourself. You kind of think you're responsible for more than you are. And I think that's a big challenge in youth work, isn't it? I sometimes think I'm more responsible than I should be. This young person's situation, I feel I have to swoop in and remedy and be the rescuer. Actually, no, Jesus is. Protect me from being the one that gets between my young person and Jesus. I need to get out of the way and be the leader he called me to be so that our young people can grow. There we go. That's just some thoughts.
Just a moment of pause and take that in. That is great, great wisdom. I want to just add something slightly different. I think it's really refreshing, actually, to hear someone struggle with change. I hope that's it's meant as a compliment. I think we always like to imagine that we are really good at change and everyone else, like our church leaders, are terrible at change. But the truth is we're all rooted in what we do and the way we've done it quite deeply. And it's difficult to change. But one of the challenges I think the church and church youth work faces in the next decade is how we change. Because the world around us is changing more than ever before, faster than ever before. The gospel remains unchanging, but almost everything else has to change. And that includes how we engage with young people. So I think every youth worker who likes to think they're good at change is going to have to actually discover, can I change the models and the ways and the things that I'm dealing with that I wasn't dealing with 5 or 10 years ago? How do I adapt to that? And Lord, help us all be ready to change. Because sure enough, if we're going to serve God with young people, we are going to have to tackle change in the next 10 years.
Wow. Yeah. Great. Thank you. And can I add a couple of quick things? Your youth group has got, I understand, a massive history, and it's been very successful. And one of the most impressive youth groups I've ever been to visit. And but it's time, you know, you rest on that, and it'll slowly die. I think One of the things is, first of all, it has to, whoever's the new youth leader, youth director, whatever, however it works, there needs to be a clarity with the leadership of the church. Do I have authority to bring about change, or are you not giving me authority? And the truth is, if the church won't give authority, then you might need to question what you can do, because that's a key issue. And it'll be very hard for a church, for you know, that's a painful conversation, but that is a conversation that has to be had, actually, in almost in the abstract, because it can get very emotional about us, and they can get very emotional, because like at Aldridge, where there's been a pride in the youth work, you know, it's been packed, you know, I've been there, you know, they've had a, when I went on the Friday night, about 150 young people there, and it's a small town, you know, and it was amazing. So there's a pride in that, and many in the church, there's a stake. There needs to be a clarity in the abstract that we want this youth work to continue, but we need to make some changes. And then I think the two things that need to go together is, for change to happen, there has to be one visionary leadership that's bold, but also that has to be allied with a pastoral heart that wants to bring people with. And those two don't always go together. In fact, actually, they often don't go together, and that's where there's a problem. You know, you either have visionary leaders who are really bold and who ride roughshod, you know, and don't acknowledge the feelings of those who don't agree, who aren't there yet, or folk who are so pastoral that everyone stays together, but no one goes anywhere. And the trick is to pay the cost of caring for those who don't see it yet, and going slower. You know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And that's a key thing. But I think it's in a non-emotional way as much as possible, even though it's deep, having the conversations with the leadership of, you're asking us to do this job. What authority are you giving us? Are you really wanting to give us responsibility without authority? You need to know you won't get the best out of any youth worker if you give them responsibility but don't give them authority. And that's a conversation that has to be had. All right. We actually could do with someone. Andy, could you go round with the mic?
Hi, we've got quite a unique situation at our church, where we've got an established youth group, and as from the when we go back, there's not going to be a youth leader. There's no youth leaders to take it on. We have a couple of kids who would like to be assistant leaders and could do the job quite well. How do we present that to the church when we're kind of leaving? And nobody's coming up and saying, well, yeah, we want to do this. The kids are prepared to challenge the church, but nobody's prepared to take up the mantle and carry on. And they are our church. The youth are our church coming up.
Can I just, so you're involved, you're a youth worker at the moment, but you're stepping away from the church or moving away? Okay. That transition, I bet, is familiar to lots of people sitting here, where you both have groups of young people who come up as a group and leave and move on, and suddenly you don't have a youth group, not because you don't have youth leaders, but because they've all left at the same time, or where you've got youth leaders that are going and leaving, in this case, what sounds like a bit of a vacuum. A couple of things, or maybe I'll just kick us off with one thing. The first is, those young people, so they are, that you say, are stepping forward and might be growing as sort of leaders in waiting. Expect great things of them, because young people constantly are bigger, better, braver, bolder than we ever imagine. And so my instinct would be not to bring big leadership in to keep them down, but how do you enable those to totally surprise you with their capacity and capability to take it on?
Good morning, first. So when I moved to rugby, everyone seemed to have a full-time youth worker. And 9 years later, I'm the only full-time youth worker in the town. And I've been trying to figure out how can we empower and encourage parents to disciple their children.
Brilliant. Can you tell us what you found out? You sound like a real expert in this. That's a challenge. Did you have a question with it as well? Or?
Youth workers anymore. Yeah. I've got a great team. And they do an amazing job.
Yeah.
I want to change that culture and say, parents, we're here to encourage you and support you to disciple your children, because you're the expert in your children. Mm. And because we get to see them a few times a week and trying to, as a whole church, disciple everyone, really. I just wonder if you guys have any insight in
that. That's brilliant. I think the partnership between families, parents, and youth ministry is really, really key. And I think probably we're coming out of this season, I'd see in church, where it's just about the youth worker. Because I think sometimes the danger is that we kind of see a young person enter the age 11, 12, 13, and we kind of feel the only person that can really communicate with them now is the 19-year-old youth worker. And we need to stand against that lie, don't we? That actually it takes a village to raise a child. And some of the best youth workers I know are grandparents in their 60s and 70s. It's about love. It's about caring passionately for this young person. It's about longevity. I think that's absolutely brilliant that that's the strategy you've got. And I think it'd be interesting to see out of that, who are the parents who have a vision more than just for their own young person's faith development and maturity, but for all young people. And I think that's why I get quite excited about the future of youth ministry, because although I grieve the lack of resources and funds, which means there won't be as many youth specialists in the future as maybe I would love to see, one thing that's quite exciting is that we are calling the local church and saying, well, what are we together going to do about this? This is our young people. This is our youth group. This is not the youth workers' youth group. This is our young people, our youth group. So I think let's watch this space. I imagine there's a number of you here in this room who've got a similar experience. You might be the only youth specialist in your area, but God's giving you a real heart to call out and raise up other leaders. And it could be that actually as Christian parents take on some of that mantle, it releases some of us to pay attention to those who are not growing up in Christian homes, who maybe are so far from church that we can be building a team to really be doing missional work with them as well. So that's exciting kind of tapestry that you're developing there. So come and tell us about it sometime. That'd be amazing.
Hey. So I've had lots of conversations over the last while, and I'm sure this is really appropriate for here especially, that as youth workers, we get really, there's a lot of pressure, like you've already mentioned, but we also get really comfortable talking about God working potentially through us, but certainly through other people. So we say, you know, young people, God is going to do great things through you. God is going to do this and that, and you can go do this and that. But what we are not so comfortable with, potentially, is God working in us. And sometimes we kind of pass that on to other people. How would you guys sort of speak into that for those who in the room are potentially sort of identifying with that? What would you have to say to that?
I'm just wondering what the barrier is, because I can hear your question and I do resonate with it myself. And I'm wondering, what is the barrier? What is our fear as youth workers? And I shared a bit last night about not being able to have children. And I remember when we were diagnosed that I was not able to have kids, just thinking, how do we walk this journey with our young people who see us all the time? And I remember thinking, Lord, I don't know where you are in this, but I can't let the young people know that I'm doubting you. I can't let them know that I'm not sure what to pray. And I remember one time, and again, this like breaks all the rules in my head, two lovely young guys, both brand new to the country, both from Somalia. I didn't know if they were Christians. In one of our youth services, decided to pray for me, lay hands on my head, and that's one of the only times I've ever sort of kind of gone down in the spirit kind of stuff. And everything in my head was like, no, I should be the one on my feet ministering to young people. I feel absolutely wrecked as a Christian right now, and God's chosen two of the most unlikely people in my head to minister to me. And rather than the youth work disintegrating, actually there was something about that shared journey that was really powerful. I think we don't do youth work as a form of therapy. We don't say, come young people, orbit my life, see the mess that I'm in, then watch God put me back together again. This is not therapy. We don't go to our young people with unmet needs that they meet. But actually there's something about the honesty of saying, I'm wrestling with this and I'm bringing it to God. And I want to model that when you bump into my life, what you see is not someone who wears the cloak of perfection, but somebody who's keenly aware that without Christ in my life, I'm a danger to myself and others. And I'm safe enough to you that actually I will as much as I can bring that to God, and I've got people around me, but I want you to see that this is what it looks like being a 41-year-old with my questions, saying, Lord, do something incredible in me. And I know some of you here might not have gone forward for prayer because you're thinking, what if my young people see me walk forward asking God to do business? And one woman came forward last night, and my prayer to her was, you're a youth worker, God has got your back. Your young people are watching you and they are not thinking, what's gone wrong? They're thinking, whoa, she's gone there, I'm going to follow. So I think you're absolutely right. I think we model honesty because we know that God is everything. God's enough. But we also have people around us who we're accountable to. So we are safe for our young people, but we are modeling something honest. Does that kind of speak into a bit what you're saying? Because we're not there, are we? We've not reached the summit. God's got so much to do in us. And that balance is really tricky, but it's exciting as well. That's why we're youth workers, isn't it?
Wow. Amen to that. I think young people will stay in your youth group for the crazy games and the zany stuff with cream crackers for a few weeks. But they'll be totally changed if you create a safe, honest, real space where they encounter faith for real. So think about, what does it take, not just to entertain young people, but to create that really safe space? And I think there are two mistakes we often fall into. I saw one a while ago where there was a little circle of young people being discipled and prayed for by a youth worker. And they were going around talking about their week. And it got to the first person. And they talked a little bit about how they'd started smoking that week. And immediately the youth worker went into action, and he had all the verses, like, you know, that great that you shared that. Here are the verses. This is why you shouldn't do that. And he shared them all. What was everyone else in the group thinking who hadn't had their turn yet? They're thinking, I am definitely not going to say what I was doing this week because I'm just going to get another load of verses thrown at me. And they sort of created a context where it wasn't safe to just be real. The second mistake is the one we've been talking about here, which is just being honest and about our own lives. It's so important for young people to know the real journey, because if they don't, when they find things tough, they feel like they've been sold something that isn't for real. So my youth worker never found this. Actually, they did. They just never said. There's a great quote I always think of from a wonderful missionary from 100 years ago, and he said, being a Christian and sharing your faith is just like one beggar telling another where to find bread. And that's really all we're doing, isn't it? We're one beggar telling another where to find bread.
This is a question mainly for Mike. Over the last few years, during the meetings, it seems like how God's used you with words and knowledge has got more accurate, and God has used you more profoundly in those things. How have you kind of pressed into that personally and kind of developed that just in your own heart and your own walk?
It started with just a few years ago, the Lord really challenged me in a loving but strong way, and he said, "You're playing it safe. You've settled. You're not trusting me like you used to." And at first, I was really puzzled, you know, and I was like defensive. And then, as I thought about it, and I remember at that time I was reading through the Acts of the Apostles, and it was like, oh my word, there has to be more. And what had happened was I fear that I had become, you know, the ministry and the power of the Holy Spirit had become a new liturgy, you know. And it was so I said, Lord, how do you want me to step out? And the sense I had was, will you trust me and go out of your depth, so that if it's not me, you're in trouble. And that's the key thing. And I'm a control freak, claustrophobic. Who one of the reasons? No, I won't say that. You know, I am, and I just, you know, like, I want to be in control, because when I was a teenager, I was never in control. When I was a kid, I was never in, I was controlled. And it was like, and then it was like handing it over. So one, it was for my personal, it was never mind anything else. It was for me to grow in my relationship with Jesus. And then I realized that I actually had to start listening. You know, when you start listening to God in a different way, your relationship with him grows in a new way. And then it was, I'm not sure if this is you or this is me, but I've made this agreement with you, so I'm going to go for it. And do you know what now keeps me going is seeing some of the fruit. And it surprises me every flipping time. Because it doesn't, you see, I used to think it would be like, hear ye, God calling Mike, are you receiving me? And it was, and it'd be like, oh, I've just had this thought. Oh, I just got this little feeling in my water. You know, is that you or is that me? I don't know. But Lord, should we go on an adventure together? And if I get it wrong, nobody dies. I might look a bit foolish, but that's okay. But what we found now, even I'll tell you, I'll just be really honest with you. Even I keep asking my friends. Just this week, I asked Andy and Ali. I said, "Do you think that this is just coincidence? And do you think that actually there are, in any meeting, there are enough people who are so codependent that they will help me out, whatever?" You know, and it's like, you know, and you know what? If we're honest, there'll be a bit of both of those. There's bound to be. You know, I'm not infallible. He is. You know, and so you know that. But do you know, I there are stories now that I have that make me just want to weep and worship at his goodness. That couldn't possibly be, you know, just one on the last night of B. It was just, it killed me. I thought I had a word for one person. There's someone here. I said, you're scared of going home because your mother's struggling with mental illness, and you just prayed, Lord, I need you to help me. I can't go home to my mum, you know, unless I know you're with me. And I said, where are you? Would you come forward? Guys, about 200 kids came forward. Now, that was like, I thought, 200. What the hell is going on? What the hell is going on? 200 who said that they had prayed that evening. Now, I don't know if they all prayed that evening. I don't know if they, you know, that. But I was puzzled, because I was like, but Lord, and I said to the others, I said, I don't know. I thought the Lord told me one. I found out the next day, this youth leader came up to me. There was a girl there. She hadn't become a Christian all week. She kept on, but her mum was really struggling with mental illness, and she just prayed that night, God, if you are real, if this is real, would you show me that you're real by telling Mike about my mum, and then I'll become a Christian. And soon after that, I had that word. Well, she was apparently, she lost it. They prayed with her. She gave her life to Jesus, and they all prayed with her for her mum. Now, you know what? I will get it wrong. I'm willing to get it wrong 100 times for one of them. I'll get it wrong 1,000 times just for one of them. Because if one person gets blessed, you know, it's no more infallible than, you know, when we tell people about Jesus, do they all become Christians? When we pray for people for healing, do they all get healed? You know, all of that stuff. But I could tell you stories. Just one other, just to give you an example. We were in Hawaii. We were invited. Can you believe it? I got invited to Hawaii to go and do this conference. And then the church that was sponsoring it, the pastor asked me, would you do a naturally supernatural evening for our leaders? And it's a key church in Hawaii. And he said, half of my pastors are cessationists. They don't believe in the gifts of the Spirit. And we're not really moving in these things. And I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? And I thought, well, I can only do one thing. I'm a one-trick pony, you know. I don't know anything else, you know. So about 100 of them gathered. And so in the prayer time, I just said, I think there's a couple here. You're really worried about your second son, and it's a real burden to you. And the Lord wants to say to you, he loves your son. He'll hold him. Your son will be safe. And you know what? Up until then, you felt a bit of suspicion. But then suddenly the atmosphere changed. This older couple put their hands up and they started crying. I was stood there, like half the room went over to them and started praying with them. And it was like, what the heck's going on? I found out afterwards that the husband is the administrator of the church, and their eldest son a year earlier had committed suicide. And a week ago, and I had no idea, a week ago, their second son, who was living abroad, phoned them to say he was really depressed and he wanted to end his life. And the father got on a plane and went to visit his second son. And the day before that meeting, he flew back. And you know, all the leaders knew them, loved them, knew what was going on. That church is begging us now. They want to start Soul Survivor Hawaii. And 12, and, yeah, and, you know, and 12 of their leadership team paid for themselves to come to Naturally Supernatural and Soul Survivor A just to see. And it was like, and I could tell you story after story of, oh my goodness. Now, when you get those things, what you feel is not, oh, aren't I hot spiritually? It's like, Jesus, you're so kind. You're so compassionate. You're so merciful. When you hear the stories, and that's what keeps you going. And you never know. And my belief, and that's why we want to do the Naturally Supernatural, is that this is for all of us. We can all hear God. Now, we might not all, you know, it says we prophesy according to our faith. You know, and I believe faith is spelled R-I-S-K. You know, and so there's an element of that. But and the other thing, just very quickly to finish on that, is I think the more you step out, the more you see. And I'll do this. I'll do what I do here. It's actually easier in a group of 50 or 100 than it is. Because like yesterday, I had a word for one and six came up. And it's like, you were all praying at 5:30? And that confuses me. But when it's, you know, you know it's when it's on response. And it's what you see in the scripture. It's what you see in the Acts of the Apostles. And I think if we ally that to caring, feeding the hungry, giving the wanderer a shelter, visiting the prisoner, looking after our version of the widows and orphans, preaching the gospel, I'm an evangelical, of Christ and him crucified, if we put it all together and create community in the church, a family. And do you know, since we've moved into this more as a church, do you know our church has just, I mean, I'm biased, but I think it's we may not be the most organized church in the world, but I think we could win a prize for the most loving. They are loving, they are kind, they are compassionate, they are humble. Because when God invades like that, what you see is his goodness. And it's all based on, you know, Moses, towards the end of his life, having seen all the miracles, he says to the Lord, now show me your glory. And you know what you want to say is, Moses, don't be so flipping greedy. You know, leave some for us. But you know, when he says that in Exodus 34, the Lord says, I will cause all my goodness to pass before you, and I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. Having seen all the power, when Moses said, now show me your glory, God answered with three words, goodness, mercy, compassion. That's the glory of the Lord. It's his character, and his power is there to reveal his character. And I hope this week what the kids will leave with, how kind is the Lord? Did you see how he met with that girl how loving he is with her? How he met with that lad? How kind he is to that? He's kind. When he speaks words of kindness and compassion. We always expect him to speak with an angry voice. And that's our stuff. Sorry, that's a very long answer. But that's where I'm at. We'll have to stop. Guys, it's actually just gone 10:15. Sorry, I get excited about that, and I went overboard. Hey, I hope this was helpful. Just to say, guys, do give us feedback. We love to hear it. We need to hear it. There'll be things that we won't have thought about. We will be praying for you through this year. Do be praying for us. And if it's possible, last thing, could you try and book a little bit earlier? You know, we work on a very tight fund. Last year, just so that you know, last year we made a loss. You can look it up in the Charity Commission files. We made a loss of £110,000. We can't do that because we don't have those reserves. And so working with young people, it's very tight. And this year, I think 70% of those who booked in in May, June, and July. And do you know, by that stage, for us, you know, we have to book the tents and the PA and the space and get the teams together and how many cafes. If it's possible, I know lots of you fundraise to get there. But if it's possible to take advantage of the discounts by booking earlier, it just helps us to not be caught out at the last minute. Because at Soul Survivor B, we were in real trouble. I mean, we had 3 overflows. It was not ideal. I mean, God overruled in the end, but it was scary. And if it's possible, that's just if it's possible. I understand it might not be. Thanks so much. God bless you. See you soon.